You are listening to an edited version of Get Radio's Business Brunch, which airs every Sunday at 11 a.m. on DAB Digital Radio across Oxfordshire and online at getradio.co.uk. For copyright reasons, we cannot play the songs mentioned in the show. But for more info and Business Brunch related content, head over to getradio.co.uk.
Get Radio's Business Brunch with Ben Thompson, sponsored by the Oxford Business Community Network. The friendly, no-pressure networking group for Oxfordshire's business people. Discover our membership packages to help you grow your business at obcn.co.uk.
Good morning. This is Get Radio and welcome to the Business Brunch with me, Ben Thompson, owner of Thompson & Terry Recruitment. Every week during the show, we share the stories, the expertise and knowledge of business leaders, large and small, with you, the listener. And this week is going to be no different. On this week's show, we're going to be talking about a subject I absolutely love. We're talking about the world of recruitment. And to do that, I'm joined by a fellow recruiter, somebody that I think is excellent and somebody that I get really, really well with a great business. So we're joined by Jane Johnson of Better People. This is the Business Brunch with me, Ben Thompson. I look forward to welcoming Jane after this. Get Radio. Welcome back to the Business Brunch here on Get Radio. On this week's show, we're talking about a subject that I absolutely love. I bet you can't guess. We're talking about the world of recruitment. And to do that, we're joined by Jane Johnson of Better People. Welcome, Jane, and thanks for joining us.
Good morning, Ben, and I'm so glad that you chose recruitment as your favourite subject and not football, because I would have been in completely the wrong place.
Well, Jane, it shows that you know me too well, because actually, secretly, my favourite subject is football, but let's pretend it's recruitment for now. Jane, for those who don't know you and don't know Better People, introduce yourself if that's okay.
So I've been in recruitment for an awfully long time, about 30 years plus. And I worked with Brook Street, part of the Manpower Group, and then I came out of there and set up my own business where I've grown to specialise supporting businesses that are recruiting for growth. So working with those business owners and founders who are looking to build an effective recruitment process to help them grow their business. You know, those business owners that know that it's the people that are going to take them forward. So, yeah, and I love that. I love the passion that entrepreneurs and business owners have, and I love being with them on their growth journey, because everyone is different. There's not a one size fits all. So, yeah, that's me.
Amazing, amazing. And really, really looking forward to learning more about Better People. And of course, providing an update on recruitment to our listeners over the next hour. So thanks for that intro, Jane. The area that there's always pressure for our guests, isn't there, is picking a song on the radio. So you have kindly chosen a song for our listeners this morning. What is your song choice and why have you picked it?
So I've chosen I'm Still Standing by Elton John, because it's a really lovely, motivating song that I really like. But I think it's particularly going to resonate with a lot of us business owners and the peaks and troughs that we've been through over the last 5 years, going into COVID, coming out of COVID and keeping our businesses going. So, yeah, I'm Still Standing.
Oxfordshire Station, Get Radio.
Welcome back to the Business Brunch here on Get Radio. If you are just tuning in, I'm joined by a fellow recruiter, a really good one, Jane Johnson of Better People. And we're going to be providing an update on the recruitment market with you, the listener. One of the things that Jane said before that song, or whilst choosing the song, is the reason why she chose I'm Still Standing is because it is a roller coaster running a business. And you touched on the C word, COVID. So let's just start with that. What's been happening in the employment market from your perspective and with your clients over, let's say, the last 5 years? It doesn't feel like COVID's 5 years ago, but let's go.
Okay, so I think going into COVID, obviously, most businesses stopped any recruitment. There were offers on the table that were withdrawn. We were all going into a time of absolute fear. It was very difficult. I think a lot of recruiters, independent recruiters particularly, went by the wayside. It was just too hard. But I think for me, I just kept at it, kept letting people know that the doors were still open. And some of my clients in interesting sectors came back first, and that was particularly property, accountancy, because obviously that their compliance around accounts didn't stop. And then gradually, you know, I think we all saw that we had teams, we furloughed our teams, you know, did we bring them back? And whilst we were experiencing that as business owners in recruitment, our clients were doing the same things. And I think there was then, you know, as we came out of COVID in 2022, 23, I think a lot of people felt very differently about their workplace. And I think that resulted in people leaving to go and raise chickens in Devon by the sea, you know, people leaving to, you know, set up their own business, people leaving to, you know, lots and lots of different reasons, people wanting to, people seeing, having a different set of values. So that caused a lot of churn in the recruitment market. And I think, and I'm praising all of this a lot, but then I'd be interested to hear what you say about this. But I then think that that caused a lot of churn in the recruitment market. A lot of recruiters had a fantastic 2023 because churn's a horrible word, but if people don't leave jobs, we don't get vacancies and so on and so forth. Also, I think business owners were smaller, you know, SMEs were maybe spending their bounce back loan with that element of, if I don't make it work now, I'm not going to. And so I think there's been, you know, and the economy has been all over the place, and I'm not an economist. I know that you know, you're very knowledgeable in that area, but we've all been affected by, you know, what's going on in the economy. So there's been caution now, you know, people are leaving jobs and their business owners are thinking twice about replacing them, which of course in turn is affecting morale, because you know, we're all going to feel a teeny bit resentful if Ben leaves and we're all having to cover Ben's work because the boss is trying to save money. But yeah, the boss is trying to save money, and that actually saves your job, but it doesn't help morale. So yeah, and I think that brings us right up to today. And I think where we are right now is that there's never been, people at small businesses, business owners, SME business owners are probably feeling more cautious now than they have for a very long time. I think they're feeling that there's more risk around recruitment. I think, you know, the changes in employment law, people don't necessarily look into them very deeply, but they think, oh, that's, you know, it's going to be so hard for me, you know, that the difference in probation and employers' national insurance. And there's never been more red flags, I don't think, around recruitment. So, you know, it behoves all of us recruiters to give as much value as we can and to help people to eliminate that risk. Yeah, that was 5 years worth of ramble, wasn't it?
it's really fascinating. And I think that a lot of our guests listening at home will really resonate with that, because I think that whether you're a business owner who has gone through that roller coaster and had those moments where, do you know what, I want chickens on the South Coast, or actually it can be really stressful. I think in a lot of past shows we've spoken about mental health and well-being, and actually I think being an owner managed business, you are at the top, and you may be amazing at sales, or you may be amazing at X, but actually we learn some of these skills along the way, or we employ or work with great professionals in certain areas. So there isn't necessarily a one size fits all. One of the things that I'm really keen to talk more about in that overview, Jane, is really let's start currently in terms of this national insurance increase and rights earlier on in employment. What would be your advice to business owners listening? Because I think that we all know when we strip it back that business owners are entrepreneurial, and actually we work with the cards we've got. But what are some of the things to maybe consider if that is scaring you?
So I think people listening are going to say, well, she would say that. That's inevitable. But, you know, having spoken to some HR professionals about this, they were absolutely supportive of this and said that if you're recruiting right, if you're recruiting effectively in the first place, if you're asking the right questions during your interview process and you're making that that selection process effective and aligned with your business culture and values, it is a lot less likely that that individual is not going to fit, and that you're going to be feeling that you need to get rid of them earlier on in the process. So yeah, that's my view on that. It's just to do what I would always recommend, and I'm sure you do too, and that's to have a process that that isn't just based on the skills list on their CV. It's a lot more. Are they the right person for our organization? Have they got the right values? Is an overused word, but professional standards, working standards, ethics, are they a fit with us? Do they understand exactly what it is that we're looking for? So that would be my advice to business owners, really.
Absolutely. I'm with you. Values is a word that's used a lot, but it's difficult not to in this case. I think a big word in recruitment that I really love is the word aspirations. And I think that if we strip it right back to the business owner, I think that, you know, we meet a lot of business owners who have aspirations to have a big business, or certainly a lot bigger business than they have currently. And it's very difficult to get to that side without hiring people. So whether, yes, it might be harder to hire. And yes, you know, you may well need somebody like yourself or us or lots of other great recruiters to really help you with that, or a great HR professional. But in reality, if you are looking to have a bigger business, you need to recruit. And then I think that if we take that one step further, I think my view is always really focus on what is your aspiration for that role, that individual, and then really understanding what are the aspirations of that individual joining your organization, and then have those regular one-to-ones around it. Because if somebody in your team's aspirations is to have your job, and that's never going to be possible, it's really good to have that conversation up front. Equally, if somebody's aspiration is that they want to do X within your organization and can add really good value, but you're trying to push them to get to Y, there's always going to be that disconnect. So I think for my big piece around that is align aspirations, and if you're unable to understand those aspirations, employ a really great coach, or employ a really great recruiter, or a HR professional, or just somebody within your business to get to that point. Jane, one of the things that I think I've learned a lot through presenting this show is how what we know may seem obvious to us, but doesn't necessarily seem obvious to those listening at home, as I think we've touched on. You know, we all need to wear a lot of hats running a business. So for those who haven't worked with a recruiter before, can you just talk with your better people hat on, if that's okay? Talk through what is the process of working with a recruiter, or what is the process of working with better people? What does that look like?
So for me, it's very important to have cards on the table, a discovery call, if you like, a getting to know you call, where I understand the history of the business, any recruitment that they've done in the past, you know, what their knowledge and experience is of recruitment, so that I can understand which gaps I'm looking to plug. And then for me, the most important thing to do next is to get a job description. Now, some business owners I speak to don't have one. They may have already recruited without one, and that's fine. Or they may never have recruited before in the particular business that they're in. So I talk them through the value of that job description. Because for those of us who you're not necessarily the most experienced people in management, that job description is going to help you all the way through. That's your control document. That's your document that you're going to use for confirming interviews, so that when people come for an interview, they know exactly what it is that they're interviewing for. That's the document that's going to help you to write an effective advert. I know I'm preaching to the converted, but that's a document that's going to help you when you make your job offer. That's very specific. It helps you with your onboarding. It helps you establish your training. And then once you've hired that person, it helps you to manage them and guide them and support them to get to be as effective as they can possibly be. And when we look at that post-hire piece, we've come all that way so far through all of these different stages. And if you've worked with a recruiter, you will have spent money and time, and maybe involved other managers in the business. The last thing you want is for this not to work now. So the job description is going to help you and the new starter to get through that probation period. And it doesn't have to be contentious, that performance review process. It can actually be really valuable. I mean, I don't know if it's ever happened to you, but I've had new starters in my business, and we've come to a meeting, a performance review during their induction, and they've said, "Why do you do this, like this, this, this?" And I've said, "Oh, why is there? Well, tell me, how would you do it?" And they said, "Well, where I worked before, we used this piece of software to do that." And you're like, "Wow, that's thank you for bringing that to the business." And so they feel very motivated and happy because you've given them, they've been allowed to contribute. So that job description is what takes you through the whole process. And that's my soapbox about job descriptions, but I really do think that they're really, really helpful.
Yeah, absolutely. One of the things that you and I were discussing on LinkedIn actually a little while ago is about that job description. And actually, I think that a really good tool for if you're a business listening right now and you've got an existing workforce, so you're not re-recruiting, you've just got an existing workforce, ask your team to write their own job description. It's a really, yeah, really brilliant task. And this isn't about having a job description that's wonderful to advertise, but actually it's about having a job description that you can discuss. And actually, and then the second layer to that, which is an exercise I absolutely love, is ask your team to highlight on their job description what they enjoy most, what do they enjoy least? What do they feel has the highest value and what do they feel has the lowest value? And actually, if you find that what you believe has the lowest value does actually have the lowest value and they don't particularly enjoy it, what can you do to get that away from them? Equally, if you feel that what has the highest value and they enjoy is really great, let's work to ensure that they spend more time doing those things. But let's be really, really negative here, Jane. Let's just say that what they really enjoy has the lowest value and doesn't make commercial sense, and what has the highest value they really don't enjoy. Actually, let's go back to the aspiration word. It enables that you as a business owner with that staff member to have that open, transparent conversation to work towards how do we get this to work for both parties. And that may be outside the organisation. So really a task I really, really love there. Jane, I'm keen to build on that piece, and I'm conscious we're working on recruitment, and my fault, not yours, I'm moving away from recruitment a little bit, but I think recruitment often starts with retention, doesn't it? I think if you want to fill a bucket, you would fix the hole in the bucket before starting to fill it. So in your experience of 30 years of recruitment, what do you see as the best exercises to ensure that that retention is right and to ensure that that bucket is able to hold the water coming in, to continue with the bucket analogy?
I think it's constant communication in whatever form you set. You know, like the exercise that you described is a nice positive exercise that, you know, for communication. And engaging with the individual, the employee on a regular basis, and with a giving them a genuine opportunity to feed back to you. Make sure that you're not going through the motions of having a meeting with this individual once a year because they're going to ask you for a pay rise and they're never going to look at the document that you create, and that's that. It's not a box ticking exercise. It's a genuine engagement with the individual to understand where they are in the business and to make them feel valued and to hear what they have to say about the business. Now, sometimes you might not like what they've got to say about the business, and it might mean that they're telling you that their future isn't with the business. But so having those performance people call them performance management. They don't necessarily need to be performance. They're just a quarterly meeting with the individual it's a catch up. It's making sure that you go through, you allow them to ask some questions, you ask some questions, you find out where they are, you address any issues that you can for them, you're honest about things that you possibly can't. You try to go above and beyond as much as you can so that you might be organizing team days, fun days, always working on the company culture. I think, and listening to what people say and letting people see that you will do what you can to action the points that they raise. Also having exit interviews, you know, the number of employers that I speak to and I say, how has this post become vacant? Why did the previous incumbent leave? And they'll be very often very wishy-washy about that and won't really know. And it's such a waste to have had somebody in the business for, you know, I don't know, anything from, you know, 6 to 18 months to 2 years. And they say, well, you know, they just stopped really engaging with everybody, really. So when they resigned, we were quite pleased. And they've lost an opportunity to understand what it is that they could have done differently or better. And, you know, we can all argue that people don't give us the full story at exit interviews. People don't say what they want to at their, they don't necessarily give us They only say what we want to hear at performance management meetings, but it's up to us to make sure that we're asking the questions that show them that we truly do want to hear about them and their experience in our business.
Absolutely. No, absolutely. And that's something that I think is a really, really interesting one. Jane, let's have another song and then we'll continue the conversation after this.
Get Radio's Business Brunch with Ben Thompson. Sponsored by the Oxford Business Community Network. Our business breakfasts start from just £15. Find out more at obcn.co.uk.
Welcome back to the Business Brunch here on Get Radio. If you are just tuning in, you'll hear a spring in my voice because I'm speaking to fellow recruiter Jane Johnson of Better People. Always really, really enjoy talking to Jane. So if you don't know Jane and you don't follow Jane, do head over to social media and follow the great work that Jane does. So today we're talking about recruitment and we're talking about particularly recruitment here in Oxfordshire. And so far, I think we've spoken a lot about the last 5 years, which I think Jane so rightly put has been a somewhat of a roller coaster, from COVID to Brexit to budgets and real positives as well in terms of hiring booms. And I think we've spoken a lot about having a really good job description. We've spoken about hiring, and we've spoken about aligned aspirations. And I think one of the things that you were touching on, but before that song, Jane, was about that appraisal process. So in terms of having reviews, and if somebody's leaving your organisation, about having exit interviews. I think one of the things that frustrates me, I think, if I'm being really honest, the most about employment, and I'm using bold words here, is so regularly you will talk to a candidate in the market, they call the office, and I'm sure this happens to you as well, and they say, I've just been let go. I thought it was going really, really well. Nobody ever told me. Or you actually speak to employers who say, Sally left our organisation. We had no idea she was unhappy. We had no idea that was working. And I think that really sums up the importance of those regular catch-ins. Having said that, I totally take sometimes having awkward, in inverted commas, conversations can be challenging for business owners. So talk to me about some of the techniques that you recommend. How do you set a good appraisal process, and how do you really let that breathe into your recruitment strategy?
So setting a good appraisal process, I think you set the expectation for this appraisal process from day one. So from the day that you send out your offer, you explain to them, and this is all part of your onboarding process as well, you explain to them what their probation is going to look like and the support that you're going to give them. And yes, there is an implicit message that if they don't meet the requirements of their job description, that we will have to either extend their probation or to let them go because they're not doing the job that we engage them to do. And so when I work with business owners through what I call my recruitment blueprint, which is the 8 pillars of recruitment that I take them from, you know, right up to my last two stages are the onboarding and the post-hire piece. You're setting an expectation that is going to happen, but not in a, in a harsh, if you don't do this kind of way. It's like, this is how we're going to work together to get you to the standard that you need to be in order for us to confirm your probation. And then I think it's important that the appraisal process is seen as it's a two-way street. And very often, if we're not careful, it can be a meeting that you go to with your manager, where your manager tells you stuff that you probably didn't want to hear. The manager doesn't really want to tell you that, so they're not really very clear about what it is they're supposed to be saying. And it gets signed off with both people feeling a bit like, glad that's over, but nothing really very much is achieved. But I think for me, it's very important that the individual comes to that the new hire, the new employee, comes to that appraisal having done some work on it. So you would send them a form so that they would get, a week before their appraisal, and it would be asking about some key stats around the business. If you have KPIs, what have they achieved those stats? You know, if your expectation is that they deal with, I don't know, say processing legal cases, and you know, they'll be working towards an expectation of handling, I don't know the numbers, but say 20 cases a week. And that's what they're going to be doing when they're fully successful. Then one of the questions that you might put on your performance review is how many, or your appraisal, you know, how many cases are you handling a week right now? Okay, and how comfortable are you about building up to the 20 cases a week that we expect you to do? What can I be doing to help you achieve that? What's stopping you from achieving that right now? So it's getting their engagement, and there might be really good, genuine reasons that you may have assigned a particular manager to do the training, and that manager has just not been able to do it, and there's something going on that you didn't know about, and it might be that, or it might be that this individual, whilst they've got the best attitude in the world, is really not as good on a particular piece of software as we thought they were, which is addressable, and we can help them with that. But we want them to come to that appraisal meeting as engaged as and as motivated as we are to get it right. And we don't want them to be passive. We want them to be active in that process. And I think that sets an expectation of that they're stepping up and engaging in that process, recognizing that it's for them. They're taking, they're being encouraged to take responsibility for their own progress in that situation. But they're also getting a clear message from us that A, we're here to support them, and B, if I've done everything I can to support you and you haven't met the standard required, we will have to extend your probation. And that's clear then. And then it's not so difficult for us as business owners or managers to be having that conversation when, God forbid, that difficult time comes that you have to let them go, because everything will have been documented. All the conversations will have been noted. After every appraisal, you send them a little email. You know, great, we were able to talk about that today. I'm going to arrange for you to have that training that you said you wanted, so that when we get together next Friday, we'll be in a clearer position to be able to see you achieve the expectations. So that's why I think it's a, you know, it is a continuation of the recruitment process. You know, when people bring people into a business, we have to get them up to speed. We have to get them productive. We have to, you know, it's our money, isn't it, that we're spending on these individuals. So we want them to thrive, and we want them to be happy. And nobody wants to do a bad job, as I think I've heard you say before. So yeah, that would be my view. Yeah.
Absolutely. It's really interesting, your final sentence there about nobody wants to do a bad job, because actually my follow-up was to reference a show where that was mentioned. So let's give Graham Hutchins a plug. And it was something in one of the very early shows on the Business Brunch, where Graham said, it's just about fit for both parties. Nobody comes into work and thinks, do you know what, I want to do a really bad job today. It's just sometimes stuff is happening in life, or sometimes it's the wrong fit. And as you've greatly put, Jane, it's about having a good support process and having a good appraisal process to ensure that it's a win for both parties. Jane, I'm really keen to flip to another part of the world of recruitment and talk about benefits, and to talk about work-life balance, and to talk about some of the popular things. So I think that coming out of work, COVID, it was a real pendulum, wasn't it, in terms of suddenly all of these people were working from home, then they were asked to go back to the office a bit, and then it was hybrid. Now we're seeing maybe more office work than we were in those days. What are you seeing under the hybrid working umbrella, and from a candidate point of view and an employer point of view, what is there a way to work out what's right for the business, and equally how you make yourself really attractive to candidates? What's your thought process there, and what are you seeing in the market?
So that's interesting. I'm seeing a lot more business owners recognizing that they can run a business with somebody and employ people without having an office. So I'm seeing a lot more of that. And I tend to do a lot of recruitment for people doing their first hire, so that may be why I'm seeing a lot of that. I'm also seeing people who categorically want to go back into the office. You know, they're looking for, because that they've been working on a completely from home during COVID and then hybrid, and spending less and less time in the office, and now they want to go back into the office, which I completely understand. I think particularly for young people, we've seen an awful lot of mental health issues coming about as a result of people not mixing and you know, working from home all the time, although they see it as being giving them a lot of freedom. I think it's hard. I haven't got a definitive answer, Ben, but I think it's hard for business owners to attract staff if they have, you know, they've got office premises, but everybody wants a bit more flexibility. So whether it's a hybrid role with 3 days in the office, 2 days at home, or vice versa, or 1 day a week in the office, employees are expecting a lot more flexibility. So I think whatever that flexibility looks like, I do think when you're thinking about recruiting and it's difficult when you're thinking about recruiting and the marketplace has changed and you've already got an existing team and you've already made a set of rules for that existing team, but you need to apply something different now, then I do think, yes, you can apply it. You can introduce hybrid working when you haven't had it before, but you need to introduce it across the team. And you do have to have reasonable conversations about how those things are going to work. And I think there's a lot of fluidity and grey areas about, you know, when people are working from home, what's their childcare like? And are you allowed to ask those questions? And some of them, I don't know the answers to, and I don't know that HR can, you know, qualified HR people can give me those answers either. So I think it's a minefield, and I just think that there's never been a time where employers adapting and being flexible and keeping reviewing what's working or what could be the best option for most of their team. You know, it's not black and white. That's Sorry, that's a very fluid answers, wasn't it?
Yeah, it's a good one though, isn't it? And actually, I think that I'm going to touch on AI and then I'm going to quickly move away from AI. It's worth remembering that staff often, a few years ago, we could have said staff are always people, but now staff are often or normally people. And actually, there isn't necessarily a one size fits all. What are some of the other benefits that you're seeing that have been popular? So what are some of the other things that employers could look at and say, oh, well, actually, it's really attractive having your birthday off, or does that not matter? Like, what are some of the things you've seen across your clients that have been popular or across your network?
Having your birthday off, starting later in the morning, working 1 day a week from home. Yeah, it's just generally the flexibility that they can offer, really. I don't think longer holidays, you know, people and holiday buyback schemes have been quite popular. So some of my clients are offering 6 weeks paid holiday from day one, which really does, you know, it's not all of us that can afford that, but that really does support their values piece around being family focused. So
absolutely. It's a really interesting one about holiday and benefits. So one of the things we did within our own business, we've done it twice now, is an employee survey, and we're tiny. So, you know, we're really trying to be, but nevertheless, really trying to listen. And I didn't feel that we're too small to do it. And we looked at holiday. We looked at things like pension. We looked at things like maternity leave or paternity leave. We looked at working hours. We looked at some of the flexibility. We looked at lots of different like fluffy things, e.g., do we introduce electric mountain bikes, etc., etc. And do you know what? I don't mind sharing this, as some of the regular listeners know, I'm quite a big fan of pensions. I've got the aspiration to retire at an early age. And I went into that. I was like, please pick pensions, please pick pensions. And then actually, you know, I'm a parent and my wife Rebecca's been on maternity leave. And I thought, do you know what? I don't think as a country we do enough to support parents or carers going off. Do you know what? I'd really like to do that. And it was really, really interesting that my team came back and said the two things we care about the most is one, professional development and being able to feel like I'm doing a really good job and learning and growing and developing. And then secondly to that was money. And when I first say that, I think, gosh, I really don't want my team to sound grabby. But actually, I think within the team, they said, look, there's been a cost of living crisis. We don't think we're paid badly. But actually, if it's going to cost you, I don't know, an extra £2,000 per employee per year for pension, we get the tax benefits, but actually we'd rather have the cash now. Or if it's going to cost an extra £1,000 having bikes to use, actually we would rather have the cash. There's always a big joke in our office block that we've got the smallest office and we cram our team in, but actually we have the conversation as a team, and I think sometimes staff will really respect their opinion being listened and understanding what's important
Absolutely.
To them. It's
yeah, and I think we see a lot of companies, don't we, that have got benefits that they really haven't looked at the demographic that they're providing those benefits for, and they haven't listened, and they haven't looked at who's taking advantage of that benefits package. That's so to be listening to your staff and your team, and what they may have said 5 years ago, they may not say today. Yeah,
absolutely. Absolutely. No, really, really hit the nail on the head. Jane, I'm really, really enjoying this conversation. Thank you. Let's continue the conversation after this.
Discussing topics that impact local businesses and their owners. This is the Business Brunch, sponsored by the Oxford Business Community Network, the friendly, no pressure networking group for Oxfordshire's business people. Sign up to our mailing list at obcn.co.uk.
Welcome back to the Business Brunch here on Get Radio. If you are just tuning in, we're talking about the world of recruitment. And to do that, I'm joined by local recruiter, Jane Johnson of Better People. So thank you so much for joining me, Jane. One of the things that I know you're really good at is that first hire, and you're really good at holding the hands of business owners, and I appreciate you're very good at the growing businesses, but let's focus on the first hire for a moment, because I think that is one area that I think a lot of business owners can be really scared to put that first toe in the pond, to hire that first person. So what's your advice to somebody listening at home who may currently just be a solopreneur and potentially thinking about hiring their first person? What's the advice? Where should they go to look?
I think they need to do all of the kind of compliance research, you know, like how much, think about how much they're going to pay this person, and then think how much the add-on costs for that are going to be. And to, you know, we're not all spreadsheet whizzes, but to set up a list of all of those things and think about your costs, you know, think about, you know, what's the employer's national insurance? We've touched on that before. You know, what kit are you going to need for them? Are you going to need any software licenses? You know, I know, for example, in my business, every time I bring somebody on, I've got to pay some more for them to use the CRM system. You know, Microsoft licenses, payroll, who's going to do their payroll? So thinking about, and they're going to have to be, if they're an employee, which is what we're thinking about, we need to think about how many hours a week we want them to work. And whilst most of the business owners I work with are super, they're lovely and say, oh, well, you know, I can be really flexible. Be realistic. You know, if you're always going to be on the school run until 9:30 in the morning, there isn't any point your person, or there may not be any point your person starting until 9:30 or 10. So think about those hours, start to build a job description about what it is that you want this person to do. And don't be one of the there's a number of things that I see that business owners in this position will often do, and they will think, oh well, this person that I used to work with before is available, we could bring them in, that would be good because I already know them, that's easy, I don't have to go searching the market for them. And I see you're nodding sagely there, Ben. But what you've done there is you haven't allowed the needs of the business to drive the hire or the employment or anything else. You've actually brought somebody in, and you're going to end up working around that individual because they're not quite right. And you know, so once you've done all your compliance listing and you've looked at all of the costs and everything, then start to think about the job description. What do you want this person to do? And don't be misled by thinking, oh, I don't know that this is a job. I don't know if there's a job called this. Don't worry about that. Just think about all the things that you need this person to be able to do every day. And if you're struggling with that, just literally have a scratch piece of paper beside you and write down all of the things that you're, you know, as you're going through thinking somebody else could be doing this. I don't need to be doing this. I could delegate this bit. I could, you know, which bits can't I delegate and which bits can I delegate? And that will inform what it is that you need to be recruiting for. But I think that one of the biggest questions that I ask people is that when you bring somebody into your business, what will success look like in 6 months' time? What difference will this person be making to the business? And set yourself an expectation that this is a measurable process and that you know you're going to be paying out of your company profit for this individual to come in. So it kind of gets people in the mindset of doing the management piece, doing the evaluation piece, doing the review of value in terms of contribution to the business. So yes, there's a lot of thinking to be done in the early stages. And I'll be honest, sometimes I meet with people and they're nowhere near ready. And sometimes that first meeting and conversation, they leave that meeting like rabbits in the headlights. But then, you know, when they're thinking and coming back, and sometimes it takes three or four meetings before we're actually ready to press the button and to go. But then what's also happened during that process is that they understand from speaking to me what's expected of them. You know, they have to do the interviews, they have to you know, they have to be the one to make the offer, they have to be the one to do the onboarding effectively. You know, they understand where they need to involve an HR specialist, you know, for contracts and you know, make contracts of employment and that kind of thing. So yeah, there is a lot to think about in your first hire. And it's not something that I would recommend people doing quickly. Do it thoroughly is what I want to say. And also make sure that you're doing it with the right mindset.
Absolutely. No, absolutely. I think you made some really good points there, Jane. Just a couple, just to really highlight that you touched on brilliantly. Firstly, is really think out the role, think about what does good look like, and really think about what is going to be that impact to the business, both in terms of time, financially, culture, values, all of those things. I think are really, really important, because we both know the biggest cost of recruitment is actually when it goes wrong, whether that be the wrong hire or whether that be change of circumstances or whatever else. So I think that's really, really important. And then I think that the other thing that you touched on there is around HR support. It is so important that you get the right information, and you're legally compliant, and you do the right thing really early on.
Absolutely.
So regularly, as a recruiter, I don't know if you get the same. Of course, not within our clients, Jane. That would be impossible. But we so regularly speak to candidates who we're putting forward to another job, and one of the questions we ask as part of our interview process is, what's your notice period? Oh, well, I'm not entirely sure because I've never had a contract. And our jaw always drops because you're technically breaking the rules. So, there's lots of great HR professionals out there, the likes of Jane Fryatt, Katie Aldridge, and I realize that I've literally set myself up here because I've started talking about good HR consultants, and I'm going to offend a lot of brilliant ones in Oxfordshire. So I've named two, and all of the others, of course, are really, really good. So Jane, I'm really keen to now talk about interviewing and interview processes, because I think that one of the things that reflecting actually back on our time of running the business, and you've been running your business a lot longer than us, is that candidate experience piece has become so big, hasn't it? I think that if we were to go back 10 or 15 or 20 years, it would have been really common for interviews to be really tough, and the business owner or the hiring manager sit there and say, "Sell yourself to me," and the word grilling became really common. But actually, now it's so important that actually candidates do have a really good experience, want to make you attractive and for them to want to join you. But also, I think that one of the things that probably isn't reported enough is ensuring those candidates who aren't successful or you decide not to press forward with have that really good experience. What's your take on my brain dump there? And what are some of the things, if you agree, that you can do to ensure that those candidates who aren't successful still have a good experience and still look at your employer in a positive way?
Yes, employers should have they should have a standard interview process. They should have a policy of this is how an interview is conducted, and it should take the same format and business owners, you know, there's never been high unemployment in the Thames Valley, you know, in Oxfordshire. And so there is a bit of responsibility on us to sell ourselves to the candidate as well, because if a candidate's good, then chances are they will be interviewing elsewhere and someone else will think they're good as well. It's also part of so we need to market ourselves a little bit to the candidate. And also we want to make sure that they do have a good experience and also that we get the best out of them. This is our time as well as managers, you know. I would always, you know, get a process, stick to that process, have some questions that you ask beyond the CV-based questions that are around, you know, the values and culture type questions that are questions that you've honed in your organization that you always ask to give candidates the opportunity to demonstrate that they're aligned with your values, that they, you know, I think everybody knows the values word now, but you know, that they share a similar ethics, that they're kind, they're decent, they're customer focused, you know, whatever those things are that you need to ask. Make sure that you're asking those in a kind of situational or behavioral type interview question that you ask everybody. It's not a bad idea to have, like, I don't know, however many 8-10 core questions that you ask at interview, so that it's very easy, isn't it, for us all to for us all to look at a CV and think, oh, an Oxford United fan, you know, and there probably are a few of those out there, Ben.
They're the only football team out there, Jane. You gave me that hook and I took it with both hands there.
Yeah, no, so I'm being flippant, but, you know, it's very easy to get distracted by a CV. But if we know that we're asking all of the people that we're interviewing the same core questions, they're all going to have the same experience, and we're going to be able to make sure that we're comparing apples with apples and not apples with pears. Always set the scene in an interview. You know, this is what we're going to be doing today. This is the job that we're going to be talking about. So we're going to let me tell you a little bit about the business. Let me tell you a little bit about how this role has come about. And then we're going to talk through your CV, and then we're going to have some behavioral questions. And then when we get to the end of the interview, always let the candidate know what's next, how soon they're going to be likely to hear about the role, and also to be very encouraging and upbeat and smiley. And sometimes interviewing isn't our favorite place either. I get that, you know, that business owners will find the process very difficult. I don't expect people, a lot of my clients, to be experienced at this. So to try and make it an enjoyable experience for everybody. And what we want is that, you know, particularly for local businesses, we want people to come away from there saying, I'm not sure if I was absolutely what they're looking for, but it's such a lovely place to work and it was such a nice interview. That's really how we want people to feel. So, you know, and I think when we have a format for our interview, particularly those of us who are not very experienced at interviewing, it gives us a little bit of control. And we do need to be in control in the interview process, because we haven't got all day for these conversations. And we do want to guide people to show us their best, you know, and to give them the opportunity to shine, really, as well. So, I think we do need to, you know, set a standard format, make sure that we're promoting our own business and the job as much as we can. Don't sell it, just describe it favorably, and make sure that the individual has a positive, as relaxed as possible time, so that they can give of their best. Yeah. So.
Absolutely. No, really, really good. Jane, we are coming to the final stint of the show, but one of the things we like to do on this show is to leave our guests with a top tip. And this isn't necessarily something we've not discussed already. It could be something we've spoken about that you suggest our guests, who are such law guests and always have big notepads full of notes that they've made from our conversation. If only every one of our listeners did that. Or it could be something completely fresh. So if you were to leave one top tip with our listeners, what would be your lasting tip or the thing for them to remember?
But for me, it would be the job description, because it's such a vital part of every part of the process. It informs every part of the process. right through from, how much are we going to pay to the job advert, to the interview questions, to the, assessments, to the onboarding, to the appraisal and performance management. Yeah, I can't live without a job description.
Amazing, amazing, brilliant, great advice, Jane. And thank you so much for your time today and such contribution to the discussion. I said at the start of the show, it was one of my favourite topics and it sure lived up to that. So thank you for your time and contribution to the conversation. Finally, just a reminder, you can listen to this radio show on the radio and online every Sunday at 11 a.m. And do look out for the podcast version, which is available on every major podcast platform. Which is released on the Monday morning. And if you would like to see my lovely guests, do look out for the video version, which is released on the Get Radio Facebook page and their website every Tuesday. But for now, whatever you're doing in Oxfordshire, enjoy, and we'll see you next week.